So to begin with another little kind of metaphor, a person sets forth to walk in the world. And the person carries along some things that the person thinks is needed. Nothing that the person was born with or grew up with, but by the time the person became an adult, it seemed essential to have these things. And so the person is walking, looking for something, carrying these things, carrying perhaps, or wearing, you know, around the person's neck and wrists and everywhere, all these jewels, some 30 pounds of jewels. And of course there's battles to be fought and jewels to be protected and power to be asserted. So there's 40 pounds of weapons. And there's always hope for some wonderful wonderfulness, dreams to what can be had, this wonderful journey, looking for something. So the person brings 50 pounds of magazines with all kinds, with all these articles and photographs of every possible pleasure and attainment and vacation and homes and recreation and wonderful things. And of course, what's a journey for a long time and it's a little bit of work to carrying this, so you need food for the journey. So probably, you know, 80 pounds of food. And you need to sleep well on the journey, especially with carrying so much. So you need to have really good sleeping care. And so it's also you carry a 100-pound mattress on your back. So the person walks and is looking. And what the person is looking for is some way, some possibility of feeling really free in this world, to be able to walk freely in the world, lightly, openly, effortlessly even. There must be some way to do this. And so the person travels for days and weeks, months and years looking. And along the way acquires more things, because they're important to have things, and things are very promising, and you might need them, so you, within a few months, it's over 300 pounds. The person doesn't make it very far each day, but... And then the person comes across someone who's supposed to be wise. And they start walking together. And the wise person says, you know, I know how to walk light and free. Really? But it does require a few things, just little adjustments here and there. You know, now that you're with me, I think, you know, you can put down your weapons. You know, it's okay. I'll take care of you. So the person leaves the 30 pounds of weaponry behind, or 40 pounds, wasn't it? Nice. And all this promise of, you know, these magazines, you know, and all these promises, 50 pounds of magazines, you know, photographs and all that, you know, these are good that you have them, and glad that you hope for some beautiful things, but you know there's something wonderful up ahead. You don't need them. Okay. Puts them down and begins to finally feel, oh, this is a little bit easier to walk. And the person goes a little bit further, and then the wise person says, oh, and by the way, you know, it's so good to put the weapons down, the magazines down. Believe it or not, these jewels, you know, you put them down. Or you would put them in a bank. So the person says, oh, bank, so safe there, so puts them down. And then, by the way, says the wise person, you know, all this food that you're carrying, don't worry about food. There'll be food as we get along. It'll come along. Things will appear. There's trees with fruit on it and all kinds of things where we're walking. And it'll take care of itself. And by now, the walker says, begin to trust that wise person. Says, well, seems a little strange not to carry all this food, but okay. So they put down all these pounds and pounds of food. And you know, you have this big mattress and big quilt and 32 pillows, and your sheets are, you know, the finest flannel, and you know, this is good and it's nice to be comfortable when you sleep, but you know, I've noticed that the weight of carrying all this, you have all these blisters and aches and bruises, and I think that if you don't have all these aches and blisters and everything from all this carrying, you'll be sleep much better, just simply, and I'll find you some nice places to sleep. Okay, person's put down all the sleeping gear. And then finally the person says, you know, there's one more thing, you know, we're walking along and you're always searching, you're always looking, and you keep stumbling, and you don't really see anything, you don't really hear, because you think it's always going to be in the future. You put all these things down. How about trying to put down the search? Well, it has been getting easier, this walk. So the person puts down the search. And the person says, wow, this is, you know, I was looking for freedom and lightness and ease to walk through the world unencumbered. And I've arrived, this is it. I hadn't realized that it wasn't out there to find a path that was kind of unencumbered, or only find a path that was going downhill, or find some planet where there's no gravity. I had to put down all that I was, this load that I was carrying. And then the person finds they can walk through the world unencumbered or easily, lightly, freely. So this teachings we're reading from from the sutta, the Buddha offers a gradual training, or a progressive training of things to do. And he says, I teach this, then I teach this, then I teach this. And then when it gets to the end, only then do you get a sense from the text of the purpose for this, the goal for this. You know, what's the goal? And there's a number of ways it's described. But one of the ways it's described is you put down the load. Drop the burden that we're carrying. And this is seen to be the synonym for this powerful word in many languages now, nirvana. Putting down the load, all the stuff we're carrying. And it's hard to put down what we don't know we're carrying. It's hard to put down what we think we need to have and that we're attached to. And so one way of practice works is we learn slowly over time what we can drop. First we see what we're carrying, and we see maybe we don't need it. We see, or we see the weight, we see the how it slows us down or limits us in some way. And we see the possibility of living in a healthy, good way without some of these things that we're carrying. And so slowly we begin to put things down. And that's kind of what the Buddha does in the sutta. First, the idea of living an ethical life that trains people in sila. And as I said, it's mostly what we put down. What is it? We put down, you know, killing and stealing and sexual misconduct and lying and intoxication. It's kind of like, you know, listen, we don't need to do that. And there are people in the world who do these things only to discover at some point the great burden of it, the limitation of it. Every year I go for one day, I go visit a state prison here in California called San Quentin. And it happens to be that the people I visit there are people who had at some point in their life done these things. Many of the people I run into are people who have killed. And some of them describe themselves as being, having been the meanest of the mean. And they were that way for 15, 20, 25 years in prison. The man I met last year had spent 25 years in solitary confinement. And at some point, something turns for them. And they decide to put that down. It's a burden. It's a limitation. It doesn't work. So that's a dramatic story of people putting something down. And it's remarkable to see these people there and see how they've been transformed and changed. But, you know, it's not uncommon for people who follow this path. They thought they're just coming from mindfulness-based stress reduction. And then they realize after a while, you know, it's not working anymore to be lying to people. You know, it was so easy for me to lie. I thought I was better and safe and made myself so safe, or I could get what I want. I deserve, after all, I deserve it. But lying doesn't seem to work anymore. And they put it down. Or there are people for whom the profession that they're in just doesn't, after a while they realize, well, I'm involved in a profession that produces weapons or is involved in war. And I don't know if I can do that anymore. And they put it down. A common one is, I don't know how common it is, but you run into it often enough, luckily, among people who practice, and they decide enough of alcohol. And it's hard sometimes because they go, just a few days ago, someone at IMC said, you know, it's hard. I go to these family events or work events, and the currency for a relationship is to drink alcohol. It seems like that's what people are doing, and I don't do it anymore. I feel so much better. I don't do that. It's just my life has changed. I put that down. So the Buddhist path begins with putting something down. And I like this idea of putting something down as opposed to the idea of restricting oneself or denying oneself something that, you know, that with some people's relationship with precepts or ethics is you have to deny yourself. I think we're putting down a burden, putting down something which is limiting and confining and undermining certain kind of psychological health. And then the Buddha talked about safeguarding the sense doors. And that's where the safeguarding ourselves. So the mind, what goes on inside of us, not what goes on in the world, that we don't grasp to all the beautiful things in the world, the sense things in the world. And grasping can also be kind of resisting or pushing away, I suppose. And so, you know, a lot of the grasping has to do with promise, what it's going to do for us. And so I liken that to all those magazines, because this really has a lot to do with ideas of what things can do. We grab onto the ideas. So we carry with us loads and loads and loads of those fantasies and wishes and projections and imaginations of what things can do. And so people hold on to all kinds of things. At some point, people who sit and do mindfulness or meditation realize the burden, the limitation, the exhaustion of living in a world where the mind's wanting and grasping and fantasies and concepts and dreams and delusions of grandeur and all kinds of things. And we feel this limitation, so that tendency to live in this grasping world of fantasy and promise and hope and put down the burden. And then the moderation in eating. How many pounds did the guy? 70 pounds was it food? 100 pounds of food? I forget. All this food. Some people have a tremendous attachment to food. I had my own struggles with food and eating and wanting food and wanting to have, feeling safe with food, feeling I had enough. It was a struggle. And for some years. And so food is, you know, and you know, maybe food can be related to not just food, but all kinds of things that we think we need for our welfare and well-being. Only if we have this, then I'll be safe, then I'll be well, and we build up all these we acquire and get. And there we know there are people who are somewhat neurotic in their attachments to exercise and certainly food and medicine and to their health. Health is a good thing. But there are people who are a little bit, teeny bit, occasionally, over preoccupied with their health or their youth or their beauty or their appearance. And this man, you know, this person had a relatively easy time in walking with all that stuff, because the person didn't bring with any cosmetics. Which is another 200 pounds. So all these things, you know, so moderation. And moderation is a beautiful word, because it doesn't mean deny. It means kind of you have just enough. Just the appropriate amount. So put things down. And then this sleep thing, I don't know if I conveyed it in a little analogy, but the idea was that you need more sleep if you're carrying 100, 200 pounds of mattresses on your back all day long. So, you know, it's easier to sleep if you don't have, you know, the burden of all this. So what is it, what can we put down? What do we put down so that we're not so attached to sleep or struggling with sleep, or what's a healthy way? And there's a lot of discussion these days about people who don't sleep very well, because the last thing they do before going to sleep is looking at these screens that apparently disrupt the sleep cycles or something in the mind. So I don't know. I don't know what hope and promise and pleasure and need we have to be on these screens all these hours and just before going to sleep. And there are people who sleep with their devices. I wouldn't be. I think there are some people who sleep more intimately and closely with their device than they do with their partner. First thing they think of when they wake up in the morning is not to say hello to their partner, but to go look for the emails, grab the phone. So, you know, this idea, you know, wakefulness, devoted to wakefulness. And what I've seen is that as we devote to wakefulness, there's actually less need for sleep. When the mind is caught up in its swirls of thoughts and wanting, and I don't know what the energetics of this is, but the wattage of that we use, but I do have the impression that the majority of our human energy consumption goes towards running the brain and running these thoughts. And one of the reasons why people sometimes on retreat start sleeping less and needing less food is because that expenditure of energy that goes into thinking and planning and remembering and just being the ordinary mill neurotic is, it's not operating. And so we need less. So we put down the things that exhaust us and tire us out. So Inez then talked about the hindrances yesterday. And the language in the suttas is abandoning the hindrances, but learning to, again, put down a certain burden, a certain activity of the mind of grasping for sensual pleasure, getting kind of fueled and pumped up with hostility, aversion, hate, getting caught up in that world and holding on. The sloth and torpor, the restlessness and worry, the doubt. They're really fundamental forces in the mind. But, if you really sit and practice and are mindful, sooner or later we learn that this doesn't really work well to keep involved in this. There's juice. There can be energy and pleasure involved in ideas and desires of pleasure. There's kind of a pleasure or juice or pumped upness that comes from aversion and hostility that some people get addicted to. There's benefits in sloth and torpor because it can look like it's safe. You're not being challenged, we're kind of avoiding. It's the ostrich approach to challenges. You stick your head in the sand and pretend they're not there. And there's anxiety and worry. That some people are a little bit addicted to because, I'm not saying all the time we're getting restlessness and worry, but for some people, they grew up in a situation where that was the currency of showing that you cared. That we, if you're worried enough or you're agitated enough and running around, it means that you're somehow, you don't know what to do, but at least you're showing you're really concerned. And so, you don't want to be aloof or disinterested. So there's all kinds of reasons for these things. And so, but sitting here and quietly, sooner or later realizing that it's exhausting, it's tiring for these mental activities to go on and on and on. And it's hard to give these up, to trust it's okay. And we do have the Buddha who's being our companion along, and the Buddha periodically says, it's okay to put these down. It's okay to simplify. Here, let go of these for now. And then in the sutta, after letting go of the hindrances, talks about people who meditate. And by now, things have gotten so simple. So much has been dropped. So much has been put aside that there's much more energy and clarity to really be focused here in the present moment. There's less forces, centrifugal forces, out from the middle, out from the center. Forces of desire and aversion and wanting and getting the world to be just right and keeping, everything, getting the world to just behave just the way it should. Whatever we're doing. And so with all this released energy, released mind, clarity, and it's easier for the mind to kind of settle in, get settled, get focused, become stable. And it's one of the beautiful things in life is to experience a stable, settled, pure mind. And these represented by what's called the jhanas, the four jhanas, the four absorptions, the four deep concentrations. And these are remarkable states, not because they're some exalted state of concentration, which maybe a little bit they are, maybe, but because of the purity that's there. It just feels so clean to have the mind, the body, the beingness, kind of so clean and settled and kind of unruffled by things and content and settled. I like the word settled. And as we do this, the jhanas, part of what's beautiful and nice about the jhanas is that at some point, one of the burdens that we put down is a lot of the thinking we do. A lot of discursive thinking is put down, that load, that weight. And even though thoughts don't have any weight, they function, or we allow them to function, as some of the heaviest things that we carry. And some people discover that, you know, they suddenly put something down that's psychological, some thought, some belief, some attitude, and they suddenly feel like a burden's been taken off their shoulders. And they suddenly feel light and open. So as we get settled in focus and meditation, that's the direction, is just putting things down, getting lighter and lighter. And all along the way, all this past, all these things the Buddha is talking about, all the whole practice of it, as we settle in, it's not so easy. And so, but what we do is we keep bumping up against it ourselves. We keep discovering, oh, there's where I'm holding. That's what I'm carrying. You know, in some ways, we haven't told you that. It's maybe false advertisements, the way we talk about Buddhism, but it's mostly a whole series of bad news. You know, it's like, oh, really? I have to deal with this now, and let go of this now, and I didn't know I was doing that. I was attached to that too, and I didn't know I had so much attachments. I thought I was just living an ordinary human life, and it turns out that an ordinary human life is full of attachments. So you were, but it's not needed, and so we learn to put these burdens down, put them down. And so a tremendous amount of the Buddhist practice, the path of practice, is not about attainment, not about acquiring, but is about letting go and putting things down. And then, what good is that, not acquiring something? Well, then at some point, we can walk freely. We can walk through this world unencumbered. We can walk through this world upright, with breathing easily, breathing happily, not feeling belittled in any way, not feeling aggrandized in any way, not cowering, but not asserting, but just here in a full and clear way, but walking, being in this world. And the analogy that the Buddha gives for this, of giving a description of the path of awakening, he does in fact describe that it's like giving directions to someone to go to a city in India. And you can give the directions, and then you have to walk there. Back in those days, most people walked. So the idea of walking. And I think there's St. Quentin is in my mind. We say that when the person walks out of prison, they walk out of prison. And generally, that's what you have to do. The way out of prison is to walk. The gates open, and you walk out, and then outside there might be a car for you if you're released. But the idea of, you know, walking to freedom. So it's learning to walk unencumbered, walking free. But it's not really an attainment. It's not like you're picking up a new burden. It's walking without carrying anything anymore. that we're lighter and easier with what's here. And then the Buddha says a very important statement in the sutta. It says, the one of the names for the Buddha, one of the epithets for the Buddha is Tathagata. And I love this little name because it's kind of a name of someone who's unencumbered with identity and being someone or trying to hold on to some way I'm supposed to be, present myself in some way, or prove I'm someone, or defend who I am, or hide who I am, or something. The Tathagata, basically, when someone calls themselves the Tathagata, they're saying, I'm like this. You know, it doesn't help, if you ask them, who are you? That doesn't help. I'm like this. I'm thus. I'm the one who's like this. It doesn't, most of us be irritated if someone said that to us. And you shouldn't go around saying it. You'll irritate people. But there is something very profound about this idea that that you can you don't have to define yourself or be something. Here I am. I'm just like this. Kind of here it is. Without definition, kind of. So he uses the word Tathagata in this little saying. He says, the Tathagata is one who shows the way. The role of a Buddha is to simply show you the path. Elsewhere, the Buddha said, a Buddha points out the way. It's for you to walk the path. So it's not the Buddha is not some magician and not some person who's supposed to have some wonderful power that's supposed to make it easy for you or. The Buddha is just simply someone who points the way so you can walk the path yourself. And as you walk the path, slowly develop the trust, the love, the compassion, the wisdom, the self-understanding that allows you to begin to put down the burdens you're carrying. The weight that you're carrying. And so what are some of these burdens that people carry and they put down? I've known people who have had years and years of resentment. And at some point, they saw it so clearly, what they were doing. And something about finally seeing it so clearly and seeing the cost of it, that from one minute to the next, they put it down. A little bit of a miracle story. For many people, it's a slow process, but there are people who put it down. Enough of this. It doesn't serve me. It has no purpose. There are people who will have some addiction to something. And some people struggle. It's difficult to overcome an addiction. But there are people who come to a point in their life where they're ready to stop and put it down, and they don't pick it up again. There are people who are concerned with a lot about having people like them, or fear of rejection. And they see how this works and how powerful this is in the mind. And at some point, maybe they see that. I've known people who see that this is not working anymore. And it's overrated anyway, having people like you. And so put it down. And the people I know who've done this haven't become mean people because they didn't care what people thought about them. They have actually become nicer people. And in some ways more honest people. People put down and their fear. Remember, there was a man, an older man, retired man, who came to IMC, and he came to me once and said, You know, it's been wonderful practicing here for the last few years. However, my grown kids came to me recently, and they were quite concerned that about my state of my mind, and they thought I should go see, neurologist, because they were concerned I was starting to get senility. But, you know, I knew that wasn't the case. You see, I spent my whole life being anxious, and my kids only knew me as an anxious person. And as I started doing this practice, my anxiety went away, and that frightened them. They thought, so there was a thing, this means something bad is happening to Dad. But, you know, so somehow he was able to put down. I've known a number of people who've put down their fear, their anxiety, and, you know, radically different. I remember one person who came on retreat a year after being in a previous retreat, and he said, oh, last year at that retreat, there was really only a short retreat, I think it was a 4-day retreat, and she said, I decided to stop being cynical. And I have. I haven't been cynical in the last, for a year now. And I said, oh, really? So she put it down. The whole idea of the whole identity thing, the ways in which we get attached to identity and need to prove ourselves or defend ourselves. And some of these identities that people hold on to are not so helpful to have. Some people have very negative identities as being somehow, that they're somehow off. And some people will cling to that and hold on to it for dear life because they're used to it, it's familiar, or because it's too frightening not to have that. The alternative seems to feel too exposed. And then it's wonderful to at some point to watch people as they do this practice. Again, the mindfulness bumping up against this, seeing it over and over again, seeing the contraction, seeing what we're doing, seeing the cost, seeing how heavy it is to carry these identities with us and trying to defend it or prove it or hide it or all these games we play around it. And then to put it down. And if it's an inherent identity that has some value inherently somehow, it's not going to go anywhere. You know, you don't have to cling to it for it to be there. Then, so the last step in this process to liberation in this text here is this practice of concentration. As the person who walks, walking through the countryside with all this burden, sometimes it's not until we start walking really smooth and easy and light that it's easy to walk, that we start seeing that what's left or some of the core deepest things that we're still holding on to. And that's one of the functions of a concentrated mind, is not just to get concentrated, but to be able to see the subtlety or the depth in the mind, the roots in the mind, where there's this tendency to cling and to become and to be and to make an identity and to hold on to, fundamental belief systems that we operate under. And so as we settle, what's quite lovely is that, it takes a long time to get into these, settled, more focused states. But as we get into them and settle finally, two things happen. One is we can start seeing, we keep bumping up into the places where we're still holding on to something, and when we start seeing it, the subtlety. Subtlety doesn't mean unimportant. Sometimes it's the most important. Sometimes it's the foundation from which everything else rises. You see it, but we're seeing it in the context of a settled, peaceful, non-reactive mind. there's a sense of contentment, perhaps, or ease, or kind of not needing anything, or not trying to become anything, or there's a kind of a trust, or a kind of equanimity, or ease, and non-reactivity, or acceptance of it all, or we're easy with things. Learn to be easy with whatever's happening. And so we see these things and we're not troubled by it. We're no longer defining ourselves by it, no longer upset by it being there. We're just able to see it and hold it. And hold it with care, with compassion. Hold it in awareness. And that's one of the goals of this whole practice, is in fact to be able to see, to bump up against the things we're holding on to, things that are challenging for us, things where we are, the sufferings we have, the challenge we have, but to learn how to hold it with compassion, to hold it with care, to hold it with non-reactivity, hold in such a way that we don't define ourselves by it or don't spin out with what it means and where it's going to go, past and future, and to just be able to be with who we are in an honest and direct way, and to hold it, and the, you know, this idea of cupping our hands together and just holding it in awareness, and maybe giving up the search. Remember the last this analogy of the story: a guy walking with person walking, all this baggage. The last baggage was not something person was carrying, but was the searching. And so at some point we had even the search, even the trying to attain something and make it better or get someplace else, or even the idea of trying to put down the burden is a burden. And at some points along the way, if not, you know, periodically along the way, at different points along the path, we learn, oh, this too has to be held in awareness. This too, we just have to be here for a while. And the burden maybe that's put down is the idea that it's supposed to not be there. It's supposed to be solved. It's supposed to be bazookaed out of existence. It's supposed to be, you know, I have to, you know. And what's maybe, you know, the Dharma, really, the Dharma, the inner life, knows what needs to unfold. You can really trust this inner process. And so to hold something with a steady, stable mind, hold suffering, hold attachment, hold the fears, hold the identities, the clingings, and not make it a problem, put down all the agendas we have about it, and just let it be there in its pristine simplicity. Just let it be that way, here, hold it and feel it and be with it. And in a certain kind of way, trust that if you're mindful in this way, honest and clear and non-reactive, equanimous with what's there, everything changes. It'll change. But the conditions for it to change are optimal. And it'll know how to change in the direction of health. It'll know how to change in the direction of freedom. And, you know, mostly your job is to hold it there. So there's this path that the Buddha gave, the progressive path or gradual training, that's step by step. And it's not meant, or not, you know, to be, just snap your fingers and you're done with. And, you know, there's important things, important websites to visit, so you want to kind of get over this spiritual thing quickly. Because, you know, but it's a wonderful, it's gradual walking. And gradually as we walk it, slowly, we start putting down the burdens, the loads we've been carrying. And doesn't have to follow the sequence of putting things down the way Buddha talked about. There are other sequences, depending on, you know, how we do this. But what I want to end with is in this analogy of this person carrying all these suitcases and jewelry and weapons and mattresses and food and all that, The person is looking for how to walk unencumbered. It's the walking which is important, not where you get. And so, regardless of how many suitcases you're still carrying, it's the walking that's important. You have to walk. Stay on the path. And it isn't that you finally come to where you no longer walk. It's actually in the practice, in the walking, there's freedom to be found, or there's the walking that becomes our lived life. So it's not like we're getting someplace. Exactly. And it might not be fair to what's said in the text to interpret it this way, but I like this interpretation, because in it the Buddha says, so he's given the instruction of the gradual progressive training. So he says, this is my instruction, what I just told you. This is my instruction to those monastics who are in training, whose minds have not yet attained the goal, but who aspire to the supreme security from bondage. So here's a different metaphor for freedom, not putting down the burden, but freedom from bondage, safety, some profound safety. Safety from being caught. So that's for the people who are training. He says, but these things, these practices, also conduce to a pleasant abiding here and now, and to mindfulness and clear comprehension for those monastics who are fully enlightened. So, if you don't want to be enlightened, doing all these things helps you have a pleasant time here and now. It just makes for a nice life. But if you are fully enlightened, it also helps you have a pleasant life here and now. And it supports mindfulness and clear comprehension. So, stay sharp. Keep walking. All these different trainings don't disappear. Keep walking. Keep exploring. Keep putting down. It's the walking which is good, and that's what I've come to trust deeply, is the practice. Just do the practice. And I feel so fortunate that I have an opportunity to practice. And I just, it feels, it's a treasure. It's a beautiful thing to be taking each step, to be walking, to be practicing. And in some ways, I've come to a place in my practice where I'm not really so concerned about how far I get in the practice. I just love to be on the path. On the path and it'll take me where it goes. Stay on the path. So you're here. You happen to be, coincidentally, at a retreat center in a retreat. It's an opportunity that comes to few people. And it's an opportunity that can be difficult to come by. I encourage you to take good care of yourself here, good care of your practice. And see if you can practice kindly with kindness and diligence to walk this path. Show up for yourself and see if you can show up in such a way that you're deeply connected here to yourself. And in the process of doing that, if you bump up against what you're holding on to, congratulations. You're at the right, that's just perfect. Because that's what the path is. It's a whole series of ways in which we bump up against ourselves, how we're attached. And so don't despair. Celebrate. But don't indulge. The path is found by putting down the burden. Thank you.